This is A Mexican Crossing Lines. Hello, this is Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And this is Duke Gomez-Shemp.
And you're listening to 88.1 FM KPPPLP Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. And today we are talking about the Dallas shootings, the aftermath of the Dallas shootings, and what preceded them. And in studio with me today, I have two very special guests. I have a guest that I've had on before.
Hello.
Avi Blackmore, who is a local intellectual, an amateur historian, a programmer, and also a social justice warrior and the great mountain floof squatch. All of it.
Right. I got to break in there. I'm not a social justice warrior. Warrior is an NPC class. I'm a dual class social justice bard paladin for all you D&D players out there.
Excuse me, sir. I will take that into account.
Quite all right. Please continue.
And also I have in studio with me close friend and also a local musician, artist, and she's also an activist, and she and Avi have both been close friends that have worked closely with the radio station and the work that we do here at KPPPLP. So welcome to both of you to the show. Thank you for being here, Annie.
Thank you.
And thank you for being here, Avi.
You forgot to introduce her full name.
Annie Winter.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just thought everyone could hear me, my voice in my head talking That's right. about
oh,
Annie.
Everyone knows that already.
So I'm really excited to have you guys here to talk about this because I've been trying to process what's happened in the past few days, and there's been a lot of things that have happened. And I want to start off by talking about the fact that those things have included the deaths of Philando Castile in Falcon Heights, Minnesota, and also Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And we want to, we're going to be talking on today's show about the way in which the information that came out, the videos that came out about those two deaths impacted people in this country, how that's different from the way in which those things impacted people in the past. And we're also going to talk about on today's show the protest by people that were protesting those deaths in Dallas turned violent and ended with the death of five policemen. The aftermath and the response to that, both on social media and locally in our community, in our own lives. And I want to talk about the cop culture that has arisen as a result of this and how we feel this is impacting our community. So I welcome every listener to the show. We're going to be talking about some very deep and heavy stuff. And of course, as always, we want to hear what you guys have to say.
You know, you can contact us many ways. You know, we're 88.1 KPPP LP Fargo Moorhead. We're adding local color to your airwaves. We're broadcasting on Shoutcast online, and you can find us on your radio dial at 88.1 FM here in the Fargo-Moorhead region. You can contact us by phone. We have a message line at 701-566-0917. You can call in and leave us your name, where you live, and give us your comments, weigh in on what we're talking about. We may play it on the air. Also, you can tweet us at media_PPP. You can email Cindy at kpppfm.com or Duke at kpppfm.com. You can follow us on Facebook at 88.1 FM Fargo-Moorhead, the People's Press Project, and Mexi-Can.
Thank you, Duke. Mm-hmm. Now, don't you fall asleep on me on the show, because you're going to have to comment, too. I want to hear what you have to say.
Definitely.
Here I am, a Mexican crossing lines, and I filled the room with three other white people, two of them male, because I want to have a cross-cultural discussion about what's been happening and how all of you have perceived it. And both of you have reached out to me in the past few days, and I know you've done so on social media as well, to comment about the deaths of Philando Castile and about the death of Alton Sterling. And I wanted to start with that first question with both of you. First with you, Avi, how is the media that we've seen, the videos that we've seen in these two particular cases, how are they different from what we've seen before? Because this isn't new. We've seen a lot of black people killed on film.
Indeed.
So how is this different? How do you think this is different? Because obviously it's had a much different impact.
Well, in the case of Alton from Louisiana, the footage that we saw was entirely cell phone footage. There wasn't any dash cam or police body cam footage for reasons. And my understanding was that they confiscated the security footage of the nearby convenience store. Was it a convenience store?
Yep.
Sorry, many details all flew by me very quickly when I was reading about this. Mm-hmm. So they confiscated the footage, but two people had different cell phones out recording the events. Mm-hmm. And I think the difference was that the footage appeared so quickly and so quickly contradicted the police reports of resistance, of an immediate threat to their lives, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't quite as striking to me as the Philando Castile footage.
And why was that?
Well, for one thing, that happened right across the street from where a friend of mine lives. Mm-hmm. And I was alerted to this before it hit the media by her sharing the video with me.
Mm-hmm.
Because Philando Castile's girlfriend, Diamond, she had the incredible foresight and presence of mind
and calmness
and fortitude to start live streaming to her Facebook video of what was happening in the moments after Castile had been shot. And as it was happening live, we saw what was being done to her, to her daughter, and to Mr. Castile as he was left to bleed out in his car. And as the police handcuffed her and put her in the back of the police car rather than attempt to get help, as her daughter, her four-year-old daughter, tried to comfort her mother. It was so immediate and so unfiltered, and in particular, just so raw. I confess I had to skip through parts of the video. It was a lot to take in, but I remember thinking at the very end that was possibly the bravest thing she ever did. Because there's nothing that she could have known that... I'm sorry, that sentence came out wrong. There's no way she could have known that they would not choose to shoot her for getting her camera out. And... for all we know, they might have done so if she hadn't.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm going to switch the question over to you, Annie. Do you agree with what Avi said? Do you think that the reason why America reacted so differently to these two particular killings that we have video of, which we've seen in many other cases, there was video of Tamir Rice, there was video of Eric Garner, there's been video of Samuel Dubose. There's video of a lot of these, many of which did not come out instantly as these did, but soon thereafter, very soon thereafter in many cases, is the fact that they were so instant and, as Avi described, so graphic. Is that what you think really pushed this over the edge?
Yeah, absolutely. There was something so different about watching these videos in that we got to experience them and in some cases in real time like we did with Volando, so that we felt as if we were experiencing these along with, and of course we weren't, but you know we were there with her. And we could do so, and we could connect with her on a human level before the media got to start talking about Philando's police record and, you know, about anything else going on before the police got to give their statement about what happened. And we see things later in the news, like I think somebody from our local police department said something along the lines of, you know, it's like walking in the middle of a movie. You don't know what happened. But we're watching this and... We're all knowing that we know what we saw. There's no question in our mind. So it's becoming obvious. It's undeniable to all of us that someone is lying here, and we can't blame the victim anymore.
Yeah, I think I agree with what you said, especially, Annie, about how we all experienced it together. It did feel like that. In fact, I really wasn't, you know, as aware of the settings on my Facebook and the fact that I have it set to just play the videos that come on until that moment, because the impact of just having it scroll by and start playing and my mind starting to think things that, you know, I couldn't logic anymore. I was like, this isn't real. Is this real? This can't really be real. Is this really happening? Where is this happening? Who is this person? Why is this on my feed? You know, like my brain was just broken. So it did have a very visceral impact. I don't think that even with all of the video, I mean, look what happened in Chicago. Remember the impact. Even a year later, releasing the video of Laquan McDonald, it shut down Chicago. Mm-hmm. A lot of people that hadn't ever been investigated got investigated. I mean, all of Chicago became mobilized as a result of that video being released even a year later. So my next question to both of you is the delay of that information, is the delay of us being able to hear about it, as you, Annie, said, before we are infected by the media spin or the statements from the police or whatever other type of evidence that the police want to interject into the conversation that may or may not have any relevance, like they did in the case of Michael Brown, where they told us about a possible or likely sighting of him at a convenience store where he robbed somebody, before they told us who the police officer was that shot him and what happened to him and why he got shot.
And oops, turns out he didn't rob that convenience store after all. But the mere fact that they put the statement out cemented it in the minds of a whole bunch of white people who, to this day, still insist Mike Brown robbed a convenience store, even though the very police department that said that retracted it within 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. And the whole idea of his having his hands up, people to this day say, wasn't true, because when they were going through the witnesses, they allowed a witness to give testimony that had a mental instability problem, which the prosecutor knew was not there when this incident happened. So she couldn't have seen anything. And whose testimony about how she saw everything that Darren Wilson said and that he didn't have his hands up, that he was charging the police officer, were all corroborated by this witness. Nobody got to hear about the faulty witness and why she was even allowed to testify.
Or test a lie, if you will.
Exactly. So my question here is this. Now that we know the impact, I mean, we just discussed it, the impact of having information in a timely fashion, in a more timely fashion than we've had, and without all of the other smoke and mirrors and spin and talk about what happened, when we just get to hear from the victims themselves and or the people that were involved in that moment, if that is the impact that these two videos have, then how do you feel about the availability of those types of video being made available to us on demand by police? In terms of video camera shooting from the dash cam or from the police officer, which in many cases apparently they can't seem to remember to turn on or keep on file or what have you.
I would say that requiring police officers to have their body cameras on at all times and their dash cameras on at all times, live streaming over the public internet, and with consequences of immediate suspension and possible termination if their cameras go off for any reasons that cannot be demonstrated to be simple technical failure. And, you know, they'll find ways to engineer technical failures, I'm sure. But I would say having that kind of instant, real-time, anybody can view it, anybody could be viewing it, and it's not under the control of the police once it leaves the camera, that'd be great. But that's never going to happen, because we have seen far too many times that the police would rather have control of a narrative than tell the truth. At least when it comes to committing violence against people of color.
Mm-hmm.
So what we as a society have started opting to do instead is the next best thing, which is make use of ubiquitous smartphones with cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And the ubiquitous ability of ordinary citizens to instantly upload video to the internet, where it can be seen by anyone and everybody. And this is what Diamond did in the Philando Castile shooting. And it was, I think, a stroke of genius.
Mm-hmm.
and took real courage and real foresight, as I said. It's unfortunate, to put it mildly, that it wasn't enough to save Philandro Castile, but it may have saved her and her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, it probably saved them from worse treatment than they got. And we do know that she was taken into custody for some hours before being released.
Mm-hmm.
I still haven't seen the news reports on what she said happened, but...
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you, and I want to make sure that we're clear. His name was Philando. I pronounced it incorrectly, too. But the aftermath in which this occurred, because of the visceralness of what happened, there was a lot of people that mobilized immediately and wanted to find out if she was safe, wanted to find out if her child was safe, wanted to get her out of jail. And they were calling the police station, and many people reported being told that she was released before she was released, including her when she was released. She said that all the people that were told that she was released by such and so time were lied to because she didn't get released until 5 a.m. or something around that time. She also said that after she was taken into custody, they held her without giving her any information, that she repeatedly asked about the status of Philando's health, whether he was alive, and that she was told that they didn't know. And she was kept without any food, without any water, without any comfort. No chaplain came. Nobody came to give her any kind of support. And then it was known, because her family was informed from that Facebook Live post where she was, and they came to the scene and they found out where Philando's body was taken, that he was deceased on arrival, that he was declared deceased immediately, but nobody bothered to tell her that. And that what they did tell her was that he was taken to a different hospital, such that when she was released finally and fled the place to go to the hospital to see him, they told her she was at the wrong place. He was somewhere else. And she then had to travel to the other place, where by then they had removed his body and she was not able to say her last goodbyes to him. And that is what she said.
Yeah, I actually saw the press conference the next morning, and she said pretty much everything she said in the live stream. And I think you said, Avi, the live streaming is really important. I mean, that's one thing that she was calling out for help, telling people where she was at.
Mm-hmm.
People could immediately act, which is different when you release a video, you know, hours or days or months or years later. One thing I want to say, though, is that I believe that the past year or two that we have been being prepared to support people of color in the community when it comes to police brutality, that what happened this week shows that we are becoming more in tune, that we are becoming better allies, that we are actually looking at the truth. We're looking at what's happening in this country. And these two deaths on the same day was sharpening that with major communities, major white communities and allies and politicians across the country. That was amazing to me. That was strong. I mean, we've been listening. We've been seeing. So when we witness another death, and from all the deaths that have been happening, like one every 27 hours, that the realness of it is really sinking into us as people, that we really need to be allies and we really need to do something to step up.
And if there was that you know, disbelief on some level that things could be that bad, that black people's lives are in that much danger, I think that seeing these videos with the immediateness that we did and with the level of graphic that we saw them, we realized, or as white people, I think white people had a, you know, suspense of that disbelief in that moment, and that they were able to really viscerally feel and see what was happening to Philando and his girlfriend. And my question to you, Annie, is, do you think that what Avi said is correct? Is this the reason why we have this cohesiveness about this, because it was so immediate, because we were able to see exactly what happened in the aftermath? And is social media, are we prepared to start streaming the deaths of people on social media and have it on Twitter? Is this the new way of doing it?
I definitely agree with you, Avi, on the impact that it's made on us. But it's not necessarily a disagreement. It's more of a challenge to say that we will never be able to receive immediate footage from police cameras and dash cams. I mean, yes, that may be possible, but just to leave it at that, I think is...
Oh, it's something to insist on for certain. But
exactly. We need to start doing that. If we actually look at the impact that it's made to have just these two videos in these 2 days, mm-hmm. and to watch things unfold, because it's been so easy for us to say that, you know, these people will not see justice. And while, yes, that's likely, let's wait and see if that's really the case, mm-hmm. because there will be public outrage if there is not justice, because all of us know the truth. It's an undeniable truth what we saw.
I'm just pessimistic about the body camera thing being complied with.
Well,
I agree completely with you,
pessimistic
Avi.
Too, but yeah. I think that if enough of us start to speak out about it, enough of us start to actually write letters to our elected officials and actually start to get out on the streets and talk to people. No, I mean, I don't think it's going to be easy. I don't think it's going to be mean. Maybe it's not possible. Who knows? But it would be nothing but pure laziness from us to not try and to not make those demands. Those cops are paid because we pay them to protect us. Mm-hmm. And if this is one thing that we can do to make sure that we receive justice, it's worth trying for.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no question. I just expressing some pessimism about whether we'd ever succeed on that.
And
front.
I fully understand that. Yeah,
I agree with all of that. In fact, I talked a lot about this extensively in the show that I did about filming the police and all of the pros and cons, all of the privacy issues. You can find all of those past shows on kpppfm.com. You just go to our podcast link, right, dude?
That's right. You go to the podcast link, and then you can check out all of our shows way back to well over a year ago.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want to talk about the Dallas shooting because we have to move on to that topic. We have to move on to, we just came to this crescendo of discussion about the impact of these videos, what it did to our community, and how it mobilized people, white people, mm-hmm. and black people, and brown people in a cry of pain to act on this. And then happened the Dallas shootings. And the impact of that is something that I'm still reeling from. I want to talk to both of you about that. I want to talk to you about the cop culture that has emerged from that and the impacts that that is having on our discussion about police brutality. And we're going to do that after this musical break.
That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the yes. sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound.
Got no walk around with a bigger one. Whoop, whoop. I hear it all day, just so they can run the light and be upon their way. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the bees. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the bees. Check out the message in a rough style. The real criminal honesty or beat. You check for undercover anyone DT. But just got me a black man, they won't check me. They check out me dark or it shine like the sun. But them jealous of them next guy, them can't afford one. Black people still slaves up to today. But the black police officer, let's see it that way. He wants his salary, he wants it. So it could turn up and take your people.
Hey everybody, this is Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
This is Duke Gomez-Shemp.
And you're listening to A Mexican Crossing Lines on 88.1 FM, KPPPLP, Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves.
Yeah, we're broadcasting on Shoutcast, and you can find us on your radio dial at 88.1 FM here in the Fargo-Moorhead region. You can also contact us at 701-566-0917. It's a message line. You can just leave a message, weigh in on what we're talking about. We'd love to hear from you. We may even play it on the air, so tell us your name and where you live. You can tweet us at media_PPP. You can email Cindy at kpppfm.com or me, Duke at kpppfm.com. You can find us on Facebook at 88.1 FM, Fargo-Moorhead, the People's Press Project, and Mexi-Ken.
You know what the definition is of knowledge?
That is a really difficult philosophical question that has undergone a lot of debate over the millennia. Mm-hmm. I can give you Plato's definition.
Well,
but I don't know how up to date that is, really. Uh-huh.
Well, in psychology class, it was defined as the ability to learn. The ability to learn from our experiences and adapt. That is what knowledge really is.
Okay.
And I believe that all of the things that we've been experiencing in the trajectory of the violence that against black people, not just including the last week, not just including the past few years, not just since Michael Brown, since a long time ago, since the civil rights movement, since Jim Crow, since segregation, since slavery happened, I think we've been learning things. We have had the opportunity to see how people have handled things in the past and learn from them. And I think that like any liberation movement, those people that acted in the past had some short fallings. You know, they made mistakes. One of the things, for example, that the Black Panther movement complained about was that many of the women were and the misogyny inherent in the movement divided the women and the black men and seeded some kind of, you know, antagonism between them. Also, queer people were not included in the movement. Mm-hmm. And incidentally, now we see a Black Lives Matter movement that is headed up by a majority of queer black people.
Yes.
So we can learn from the past.
Queer black women, no less.
Right. And we can learn from those past mistakes, incorporate our new knowledge, and become a new fighting force. One of the things that I was struck with after all of the you know, the pain and the sorrow and the anguish of dealing with the latest murders of black people at the hands of police, which quite honestly really knocked me back, like out of commission for like a day. It was hard for me to, you know, be optimistic or imagine a way to feel some form of enrichment, some way of taking something from this, taking something from the ashes and getting up and then moving forward and trying to continue on that path to liberation.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing that you got to think about once you're done with the shock phase.
Right. It's astounding. But one thing that I did feel very hopeful about is the fact that we can have these discussions here at KPPPLP. Mm-hmm. I don't hear this kind of discussion in the media, in the mainstream, about what is happening. And I also truly believe in what Annie said earlier, that whether or not we'll be successful, we know what the challenges are going to be. It does not stop us from choosing to climb that mountain anyway. Even if we aren't going to be successful as people of color, we don't have any choice. We may not be climbers. We may not like to climb, but we have to, because it means our survival. And so I think that one of the things that I feel in the aftermath of the Dallas shootings is a silence that came over the deaths of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile. I feel that that crescendo, that coming together that I felt in the community, that collective knowledge of the truth, that collective need for justice, the seeking of justice, that was so strong that even Governor Mark Dayton came out and said, we need to confront racism in the state of Minnesota, in our country. We need to talk about police brutality that is obviously affecting black people more than it is whites. And he said that had Philando not been a black man, he would probably still be alive. That was something I had never heard from a governor in the state, in any state, since these killings have been occurring. Even when I've heard not scolding, not hurtful or silencing, like some of the things that we heard coming out of Missouri right after the killing of Michael Brown. I've never heard a governor speak, any politician speak, to this kind of police killing the way that Governor Mark Dayton did.
But.
And then these Dallas shootings happened and we lost something happened. And I don't mean in any way to diminish the deaths of the officers in Dallas. But one of the things that I saw on social media in the immediate aftermath of the killings of those police officers was a 180 degree flip of most of those same white allies, progressive allies on social media, on Twitter, who just moments ago were tearing their heart out and promising to find justice for the last two fallen people, switch to all lives matter type of rhetoric, an eye for an eye type of rhetoric. I want to ask you, I'm going to start with you this time, Annie. How did you feel when you saw what was happening on the television in terms of the Dallas shootings?
Honestly?
Yeah, honestly. I want you to tell me honestly. What did you think?
So my gut reaction when I saw this is, oh my God, I think this is the United States government doing this. Mm. And I know that might sound a little far-fetched to some, but I think that our history will show that that's really not that far-fetched.
I think our history has shown that it's not far-fetched. I mean, we have plenty of examples of where our government has taken actions to create a scenario for war, not the least of which was the Iraq War.
Mm-hmm.
And the weapons of mass destruction that did not exist, as a way of finding an excuse for violence, for taking an action against people committing genocide against people that would otherwise seem like harmless victims, victims that didn't have any kind of power to even act against us to defend themselves, and would make us look quite monstrous in the face of history.
The only thing I might say in response to that is, I don't know about the federal government, just because, you know, with Obama being the president, I don't think he'd sign off on that. Texas state government now? That's a different story.
You're talking about Obama, the guy that sends drones and indiscriminately kills people in other countries and a bunch of innocent bystanders in the process? Is that the Obama you're speaking of? Or are you talking about the Obama that has deported 400,000 people to Mexico and Central America every year since he became president?
Fair point.
Or,
I retract it.
Or are you talking about the Obama that said he would close Guantanamo Bay because it was morally and illegally standing and that he would make sure it was going to be shut down and still hasn't? Which one of the Obamas? Because I could keep going.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And, I mean, and
he speaks good words, but he is, after all, the part of the system.
You know, I support what Annie said. That's a pretty much the first thing I thought. Well, first thing I thought is that I was feeling empathy and connections to people who are feeling pain. My family was crying. We were traumatized for the day, and then some cops are assassinated in Texas, in Dallas, and I feel really bad because I know I'm supposed to feel bad when human beings get killed, but I didn't. My first reaction wasn't that I felt bad for people getting killed, these cops getting killed. I knew immediately the attention was off the black men who had just been killed that day. And the trauma that that had caused across the country was being diverted into sympathy for the cops, like what happened here with Officer Mosier in Fargo, with the blue lights going out everywhere, with, you know, the disdain for the Black Lives Matters movement. I saw all that.
That was my first
reaction to not feel empathy for these human beings being killed, because I saw a larger frame that was being spun and spun. We stayed up till 4 or 5 in the morning watching CNN, but then also watching social media and seeing the spin happening and seeing the focus change. And I haven't hardly read any news today. I don't even know what happened after 4 a.m., but I know that something changed dramatically last night because of that.
You're not wrong. My first thought was, oh boy, they're going to try and blame this on Black Lives Matter, even though BLM is a nonviolent movement.
And we've heard it before. That's why you thought it. Am I correct?
Of course we've heard it before. It's always the way it goes. It's whenever a police officer kills a person of color, it's you can't judge all police by one bad apple. But whenever anything bad happens to a police officer that looks even tangentially like it was in the same vicinity as a Black Lives Matter protest, even if it's quite obvious to everyone on the ground that BLM was not connected, the rhetoric from the same people who were screaming about don't judge by bad apples is those Black Lives Matter people are all thugs and bleep, 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 and things that I cannot repeat on the air and wouldn't want to anyway.
And then you can see the true, you know, what's at the heart of their angst, what's at the heart of their feelings about black people that so readily makes them able to have this switch in their feeling. And, you know, to what you said, Annie, I will mention that Alicia Garza, in an interview that she gave following the deaths of the Dallas police, said that she had some similar feelings and she knows that COINTELPRO exists and that's why she's able to have them. Just ask anybody at the incident at Oglala. Just ask anybody that was in the Black Panthers. Just ask anybody that was in the Brown Berets. Ask people that were part of the massacres at Kent State. And you'll find out that our government is capable of taking action against its own citizens, especially, not specifically, especially in times of turmoil, to try to create a frame, a message under which the state authority and the state power can take action. And you know what I saw? I saw that in this country, after the massacre of these two black men and the outrage that was caused by it, I saw that police officers were not going to be tolerated to be marching around with all of these mourners in their riot gear, riding around on their tanks, throwing tear gas and shooting rubber bullets and shooting people that were protesters, peaceful protesters and journalists. I pre-saw it. Oh, they're not going to be able to go out there in their riot gear right now because that's going to look real bad in the midst of this.
But now and suddenly then, it's fine.
But then after the Dallas police shootings, don't you think that police are going to make sure that when they go to protect the peaceful protesters at these events, they're going to be armed to the teeth to protect themselves because now they have to? What is the logical conclusion of looking at the way in which these officers were attacked and knowing that they were outmanned and outgunned by two snipers? And if you're talking about the...
That kind of sniping capability is rare, to say the least, among civilians.
Right. But yet you have CNN and other news sources going back and forth between a conversation about whether this was highly organized and planned or whether this was just a fluke that somebody opportunist took an opportunity to take these people out. Now, Avi, you told me that you learned that one of the shooters was a black man.
Yes, but what I recall reading was that before, apparently he had a bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least that's what the police said.
Mm-hmm.
And before he was blown up by a remote robot, mm-hmm. a bomb demolitions robot,
mm-hmm.
because he refused to surrender, he apparently said that he was acting alone
mm-hmm.
and was not affiliated with Black Lives Matter or anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know. If the Dallas Police Department wanted to participate in the frame-up of Black Lives Matter as a movement, I don't know how releasing that statement would help.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm inclined to believe it's genuine for now.
Because they're releasing the statement because they believe that that Black Lives Matter is not involved.
Right.
However, have you listened to the discussions and the news, the pundits, the police union leaders, all of the folks that are talking about this incident and linking Black Lives Matter to the incident?
Mm-hmm. Certainly. The Dallas police don't need to make the connection. They can truthfully express what they heard. That, you know, he says he acted alone and we're inclined to believe him. They can say that. And whether they want anyone to or not, because I'm not here to speculate on that.
Right.
Whether they want anyone to or not, white punditry in the media will continue to link them together simply because that's what white supremacy does.
So about a year ago, when we had a lot of protests around Black Lives Matter, and there was a number of deaths, including the one here in Fargo of Officer Mosier, there was a cop climate that I saw emerge where people immediately, especially within the police system, started saying that cops were targeted, there's a war on cops, cops are being targeted, and that they were being targeted because Black Lives Matter is protesting, because they are saying that police are bad, because this propaganda by the Black Lives Matter movement is causing people to hate the police and therefore target the police for violence, and that's why police are being targeted. I'm seeing the same rhetoric come up again. Mm-hmm. Annie, I want you to tell me what you think this impact is going to have on our community and what the impact it is having. I've talked to you about some of the stuff I've seen on social media. What do you think the impact is for communities, especially white communities that are allies to the Black Lives Matter movement?
I mean, I think it ultimately creates a lot of fear amongst allies and people who want to consider themselves co-conspirators. Because if they make an association with this group, then they're going to be considered by their largely white conservative community to be somebody that is
anti-cop
mm-hmm. or threat to their community, a bad person. So it makes people less likely to talk about police brutality against black and brown bodies. It makes it more taboo of a subject when just one day ago, it was a really different experience when we felt that that humanity, when we felt like we could talk about it. And this happened and it took it all away.
Are those two things mutually exclusive? Can you not criticize police brutality and also be pro Lives Matter?
Yes, you can. Heck, yes, you can.
You can use hell. It's fine.
Okay. You definitely can. And I think that a lot of us are going to continue to do that. But those of us that were just starting to really understand and see the severity of the problem and the danger that black and brown people are in, that we're going to start talking about it now that that pull is kind of turning in the other direction.
So what would you say to those folks? You know, what would you say as a local activist, as somebody that struggles with these issues yourself, what would you say to those folks that are now been silenced into fear?
Don't forget what you saw. Start talking to people of color. Start listening to people of color. Read and know that not every little bit of rhetoric that you're fed on the media or by the cops or by your elected officials is necessarily the truth, because we've seen that there aren't always consistencies there. Usually not. Yeah, that's
okay. Avi, what do you have to say?
Well, a couple things. First, everything Annie said, I'm totally behind. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about what you said about the cop culture or the rhetoric that appeared last year after the Moser shooting of police are under attack, and blaming it on Black Lives Matter for protesting police brutality. Mm-hmm. It's just not a valid inference. The thinking is screwy on multiple levels. I mean, for one thing, we know from statistics that it's never been safer to be a cop in this country. Police are less likely to die on the job than garbage collectors.
Wow.
Or sewer maintenance workers.
Mm-hmm. Which is not true for black folks.
No. Mm-hmm. No, it is not. But police, on the whole, there are high-profile shootings, and one of the things about our ubiquitous social media and our ubiquitous cameras and our instant news feeds, they have benefits, which we talked about earlier, but the drawback is that because everything that happens can be brought to our eyes instantly, it lends a sort of immediacy to each incident, regardless of where it happens, which can obscure the actual frequency. Because mm-hmm. anything that happens in the news is unusual by sure. definition. Otherwise, right. it wouldn't be news.
Right.
And the fact that so many black and brown people have been killed by police and that it's still making news mm-hmm. still highlights how it may be unusual in the minds of the public to have access to this information. Mm-hmm. It's not as though those things didn't happen before we had ubiquitous cameras.
Right.
But the other thing I was thinking was, for police or for their supporters to blame a movement protesting against police brutality for violence against the police is to fundamentally miss the point.
Yeah.
Because
in a very cruel way, by the way.
Very, very cruel. Because fundamentally, Black Lives Matter, from everything I've read about them, everything I've read them say, everything I've heard them say, they're not against the existence of police. They're against police brutality.
Violence.
They're against police violence without justification. Mm-hmm. And real justification, not ad hoc made up.
I'm afraid.
I feared for my life because this person was on the ground and I had my knee in his back, but he still moved.
Yeah.
I mean, like, real active, okay, he had a gun out and he was shooting at me.
Right.
You know, I think anybody who...
Which we've seen plenty of white people do to cops and get away with their life.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And there was a case just last week where... or the week before, I believe.
There was a case the day that Alton Sterling died.
Yeah. I was thinking... Right, of this case a couple of weeks ago where this white woman killed her two daughters.
Oh, yeah.
And then the police had to shoot her because she was actively shooting at them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a white woman. It was very unusual right. for her to be shot. Mm-hmm. Ideally, that wouldn't have happened at all. But ideally, but closer to ideally, at the very least, black people being shot would be about as frequent as that. Because mm-hmm. limited to, okay, they were actively armed. But... Mm-hmm. So to wrap up, my point is that you can't blame people who are critical of police for wanting to destroy police, especially when the criticism is coming from a place of, we want them to do their jobs the way they say they do.
Mm-hmm. And describing violence simply to people that just want to have justice, you know, is really, like you said, missing the point. And with that, I want to leave you with this program about the deaths in Dallas. I want people to think about what's happened and not just think that what the media tells them is the narrative. We have to think beyond that, and we have to continue to remember Philando Castile and Alton Sterling. Let's not forget that Black Lives Matter. This is A Mexican Crossing Lines. Thank you for listening.
This is what happens when you call the cops.
Say what?
This is what happens when you call the cops.
Come on.
This is what happens when you call the cops. You get your rights violated or you all get shot.
This is what happens when you call the cops. This is what happens when you call the cops. This is what happens when you call the cops. You get your rights violated or you all get shot.
I'm sick of people being victimized by criminal cops. Psychopathic predators terrorizing neighborhood blocks. Equipped with pepper spray, mace, cuffs, tasers, and glocks. They like serial killers acting out subliminal thoughts. Forget what you taught. These cops have got a license to kill. Witness intimidation means that they can use it at will. Code of silence means that the pigs will never let out a squeal. And if they go to court, they know the judge will make them a deal. For real, that's why they stopping me, locking me up and stopping me. Confiscating my property, talking in my demography. Making the poor commodities, profiting off of poverty. Enforcing policies, supporting prison economies, yeah. No one makes money when the violence stops. Hating brutality's the way to make a criminal crop. Blood in the gutters, how the rich butter they bread at the top. And that's why this is what happens when you call the cops.
Come on. This is what happens when you call the cops. This is what happens when you call the cops. This is what happens when you call the cops. You get your rights violated or you all get shot. This is what happens when you call the cops. This is what happens when you call the cops. This is what happens when you call the cops. You get your rights violated or you all get shot.
911, what's your emergency?
I'm mixed up in the system and these pigs is trying to murder me. They mace me, they tase me, they trained them to hate me. Degrade and detain me and change just like slavery. Hands up, face down, left hook right quick. Throw you down, hold you down, smack you with that nightstick. Night shift, riding round, see you with your J's on. You'll get sprayed on over Skittles, word to Trayvon. All the people saying is it's crazy down in Florida. What you saying is you playing, it's the same in California. They ganging like they banging and they'll hang you down in Georgia. Frame you in a case for what you say without a lawyer. Swarming with no warning, now they sorting through your residence. Swarming with no warrant, now they snorting all the evidence. You better just learn to dodge a box, cause this is what happens when you call the cops.
Come on, this is what happens when you call the cops.
Say what?
This is what happens when you call the cops.
Come on,
this is what happens when you call the cops. You get your rights violated or you all get shot.
Yeah.
This is what happens when you call the cops.
Come on,
this is what happens when you call the cops.
Say what?
This is what happens when you call the cops. You get your rights violated or you all get shot.
We got a baby in the living room.
Get the grenades, pull a pin, throw it in the crib, blow him away.
There's a homeless guy camping here.
We'll tell him to pack. When he gets up and starts leaving, shoot the bum in the back.
This guy rolled through a stop sign.
That's drugs for sale. Get some doctors to rape him, send him a bill in the mail.
We got a black man knocking on a white woman's door.
With 10 shots point blank, he ain't gonna knock no more. Look,
The problem starts at the academy. New cadets are indoctrinated with a military mentality. With them as the soldiers and us as the people they're battling. We're either collateral damage or combat fatalities. Either way, the reality's that it's not gonna stop. Cause this is what happens when you call the cop. This is what happens when you call the cop. Come on, this is what happens when you call the cop.
This is what happens when you call the cops.
Come on.
This is what happens when you call the
cops. This is what happens when you call the cops. This is what happens when the cops.